We ended about one verse away from the beginning of chapter 7, and today I'm going to just start with chapter 7 of Exodus. It's very good to have you here with us. I'll have the text on the screen. The Lord said to Moses, "See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh." I've been reading, I have a new volume of Luther's works. I don't know if you know this, but the American edition of Luther's works stopped in 1955 or something like that. There was no translating done for many decades. And they just recently have started again. So there's kind of a renaissance in translating happening around the Lutheran church these days. But they're up, my last volume is volume 55, and now they're up into the 70s with the new volumes. The thing is, for my Luther, I paid $500 to a professor who was retiring back in 1994, I think. Gerhard Franzmann, some of you might know who that is. I bought his, he knew my name all year because I had to give him a check every month. So, "Tim, how you doing? So good to see you." I thought, "Yeah, I'll bet it's good to see me." And but I got permission from my then fiance to do that and bought his Luther. But now, so that was $500 for 55 volumes. Now you pay about $60 for one volume. You do the math. But I've gotten a couple. And the one on Exodus that I'm reading as we're going through this class together is delightful. I wanted to comment that because where the Lord says here, "I've made you like God to Pharaoh," Luther has about 8 pages on that phrase. You know, that this is not blasphemy. God is saying you're going to be, and really the word "like" in our translation, we kind of add because it's so uncomfortable to read this and say, "You'll be God to Pharaoh." You understand what it means, but essentially it means that you will be the mouthpiece of God to Pharaoh, and Aaron will be your prophet. That means Aaron's going to speak, but what's coming to you from Aaron, or rather what's coming to Pharaoh from Aaron, is coming from you. You are to say, the Lord says in verse 2, "Everything I command you," and your brother Aaron is to tell Pharaoh to let the Israelites go out of his country. So the Lord is very specific with what he wants Moses to say, what he wants Moses to do. Does this power, this greatness, come out of Moses himself? No. In fact, Moses took pains to demonstrate this by telling us about God trying to kill him out in the desert. Just a couple verses ago, Moses had neglected, or I don't think forgotten, but I think neglected to circumcise his son as they traveled, and they had to circumcise the boy out there in the desert. And so Moses is one who breaks the law, does not do God's will, is a sinful, fallible man, like all the rest of us. So somebody have to get that? Okay. We're going to bring that up in a little bit, but yes, it is, he's going to say in a little bit here, Luther will actually say, for us, heaven is too high and hell is too deep. So when God illuminates himself, it's so glorious that we don't have any boundaries up there when we're looking at God, when he lets us know his full glory. But when God turns off the light on himself and we plummet back down into the depths of hell, it's too deep, it's bottomless. And we just keep falling and falling and we can't see our own way out of it. That's how dramatic the change is. And when it is either exceedingly illuminated or exceedingly obscured, and so we don't know the measure of heaven or hell. And Luther goes on to say, under normal circumstances, it would be impossible for these signs and wonders not to change a human heart. And therefore, what's happening with Pharaoh, for a man to become so hard-hearted and stiff-necked, is God's work and God's wonder. So God is at work, because this needs to get so far down that the power of Pharaoh has to be so afflicted, and the resistance to the Israelites leaving has to be so diminished, that the Egyptians will eventually beg and force the Israelites out to show Pharaoh just exactly who is in charge, so that he acknowledges that this is the hand of God. But what happens here with Pharaoh is not only about Pharaoh, it's also about all of the Egyptians, but it's also about everyone who hears about this in the future. So the Canaanites will be affected by what happens with Pharaoh. And they will have heard about it. And how could Pharaoh have not have had Moses killed? How could this have happened? Well, it was the finger of God, as Pharaoh's own magicians will say. Diane?
I was going to say, isn't his mind set like Satan? He hates God or hates everything so much he will not listen to reason or listen to be logical?
You've thrown out a couple of different lines of questioning there. And yes, the human reasoning left to itself is the most unreasonable thing. We tend to be blind when we try to reason. It's really afflicted and affected by sin. Humans are most unreasonable. Exactly. But with regard to what Pharaoh acknowledges, we'll see it coming up in the text. There's going to be a point early in the plagues when Pharaoh will actually ask Moses, pray for me, please. Pharaoh will get it. This is coming from God. I'm still not going to let you go, but please just get these frogs out of my bedroom. You know, so please pray for me. Let's get into the text and get there, okay? Then we'll talk about it more. Verse 3. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my miraculous signs and wonders in Egypt, he will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt with mighty acts of judgment, and I will bring out my divisions, my people, the Israelites. The word divisions here is the word for, we often will say hosts, like God of hosts. God of armies is how the ESV likes to translate it. It means really army divisions. So I will bring out my, I translated this chapter a little while ago. We're not using my translation, but I'm working through Exodus also. And I think I said my vast numbers of people. That's the idea anyway here. Anybody know how many guys are in an army division as opposed to a platoon or a brigade or something? A division is huge, usually many, many thousands. In fact, a division is so large, a colonel can't command it. It has to be a general of some kind with other generals under him. So it's a very, very large group. And there were, well, how many Israelites came out of Egypt? Do you know the number approximately? 2 million. That's based, and the only number we have is that their army with males of military age was 600,000 something. And so if you kind of do the math on that and say, well, there must have been more younger men and older men than that, and then you double that for women, and then you count how many, well, that includes children then, if you're going to do it that way, and you end up with about 2 million Israelites. That's a lot of people coming out of Egypt. All right. So that also, these signs that are about to take place, we haven't even started yet with the miracles. The signs of the miracles and the plagues on Egypt are also for us a forewarning about the signs of the end times. It's the same kind of things. Pharaoh should have known that this is going to get worse. And as they began to get worse, he should have come to that realization, but he was hardening himself. Eventually, God would begin to harden him instead of Pharaoh hardening himself. We'll talk about that when we get there. That's not even these plagues. It'll be a week from now yet. But the signs of the end times will begin, and there will be people who will not recognize them. They won't know. Jesus says, and is it Matthew? I was just reading this last night, probably. Oh, that means it was Matthew 15, or 16, Matthew 16, that you see when it's a red sky at night, you know what weather is going to be. What does red sky at night mean?
Sailor's delight.
Sailor's delight. The sailor's part isn't in what Jesus says, but yeah, that's right. But what does a red sky in the morning mean? Take warning, because it's going to be a storm that day. Yeah, so that whole spiel is spoken by Jesus without the sailor part. But he says, you know how to interpret the sky, so understand that you've got to be able to interpret the signs in the world as well when these things happen. Okay, 5. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring the Israelites out of it. And more than just the Egyptians, everybody else is going to know as well. Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord commanded them. That verse is an important recurring verse, when Moses and Aaron do everything the Lord says. There is going to come a moment where they make a mistake and they don't. Do you remember what that is? It's not in Exodus. No, that's not disobeying a direct command from the Lord. It's a law. But I'm talking about God told them, do something this way, and they didn't do it exactly that way. Say it again, Brent.
Bringing the water out of the rock in the wilderness.
Yeah, at Kadesh, Moses brought the water out, and there is a reference there to God saying, just speak to the rock, and Moses hits it instead. But also then, Moses and Aaron take credit for it. And they say, we brought this water out for you. And for all the things that Aaron did, including Aaron was responsible for the golden calf. Aaron was there when Aaron and Miriam rebelled against Moses and so forth. But it's that one, taking credit for the water at Kadesh, that is what God says to Aaron will let him not see the promised land. So, and that's also why Moses didn't see the promised land except from a high mountain. But Aaron dies on, Mount Hor down south. And then Moses, of course, dies on Mount Nebo off to the east. But yeah, otherwise, through Exodus, though, they do just as the Lord commanded them. Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. So here is the chronological moment that tells us how old Aaron was, or how much older than Moses Aaron was, about 3 years. And I don't have more to say about that, but anybody, John, did you have a question, or you're just scratching your cheek? That's allowed. Okay. But be careful. Okay. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, perform a miracle, then say to Aaron, take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, and it will become a snake. The word hurt here in chapter 7 is not the usual word for snake. Usually it would be Nahash or something like Nehushtan. It's Tanin here. I'm not exactly sure why Moses does this, but it does seem to be a coiling serpent, something a little bit more scary looking, like a pit viper. I forget what the vipers of Egypt are called. Are they adders or asps or whatever they are? What's the pit viper in America? It's the rattlesnake, right? Oh, the cobras in Egypt is what the pit viper. There's all the same family. They're but they've got venom, and so they kill with their venom. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh. In Hebrew, it says they went in to Pharaoh. Does that imply into Pharaoh's compound or in the building or what? I'm not sure. But they go to Pharaoh, and they did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron threw his staff down in front of Pharaoh and his officials, and it became a snake. Pharaoh then summoned wise men and sorcerers, and the Egyptian magicians, so three different words for these guys here, also did the same things by their secret arts. That word secret, in it, it's often other places in the Old Testament. Is it chatov, I think? It means a flame or a mysterious flame of some kind. It's the word that gets used for the flaming sword in the Garden of Eden. So by their flaming secrets or whatever, it just makes me think of when a magician likes to startle you for some sleight of hand, what does he usually do? A little flash powder? You know, something like that. I don't recommend this, but I was in my 20s and I was a camp counselor. Has anybody heard of Camp Basic? Anybody at all? Fairly much, yeah. It's at Wyalusing. My congregation held a summer camp at Wyalusing State Park on the river. And then a week later, we held Camp Basic, which is for people with special needs to have a summer camp. Same cabins and everything. I just bring it up because it was there that about... I was counselor there for about 10 years. And I had a terrible habit that I'm embarrassed and ashamed of telling ghost stories to the kids at night with a can of lighter fluid. So I'd, you know, squirt it to make the fire jump up, and then they'd be terrified. And I think of it now and think about, what would the hospital have said as I'm brought in all burned? Dumb things you do when you're young. And that's the same... Oh, no, never mind. Dumb things we did in those days. But anyway, that might be what the flaming part of this is all about, that they were using something like flash powder or something, or oil that would burn or something like that. But these Egyptian magicians with their secret arts, each one threw down his staff. So guy after guy after guy. Was it just, as Paul says to Timothy, Jannes and Jambres? Because Paul mentions two of them by name in the New Testament. Or were they just the leaders? Were there 7, 8, 12 of them? I don't know. We certainly have plural wise men and another plural sorcerers. So it seems like there's a couple different groups of guys here. Some guys who were learned with book learning, and some guys who were more magical, and some guys who were kind of both. Did some of them communicate with the dead? Did some of them do omens? We don't have enough information to pin them down here, but there were a bunch of them, and they each threw down his staff, and it became a snake, something obviously the Egyptians knew how to do. So God begins with, I don't know, from God's perspective, I'll start with an easy one. You guys know how to do this. I'll have Moses do this. So Moses, and they think it's a secret, and now the shepherd comes in out of the desert and does it. Each one of them threw down his staff and it became a snake. And now what story does this remind you of? But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs.
Joseph.
See it again?
Joseph.
Exactly right. Yeah. What in the Joseph story? There are a couple things, right?
His dreams.
Yeah, what are the details in the dreams? It was
other cows.
Yeah, the cows ate up the other cows. And consume them, there were two different versions of this dream, and it seems to be a thing now in Egypt. That would be a sign they would understand that the one thing swallows up the other means that the one thing overpowers it. So which one is stronger? Well, Aaron's staff is stronger. Aaron's one staff swallows up all of these other snakes. And then what has God done? Do they get the staffs back? No! If you were a magician and you had this special magic stick, and then this guy takes it, and my thing is gone. And well, they're okay, they're gone. It's a part of the miracle we don't often think about, but their magic tricks are all gone now. Yet Pharaoh's heart became hard, and he would not listen to them, just as the Lord had said. So we begin with that one. We're not even to the first plague yet, but just the opener. So what do you call that in car? The ante, right? Then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is unyielding. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he goes out to the water. What do you think that verse means? As he goes out to the water. I think it's probably morning prayers. A morning prayer to the Nile. To the Nile. Pharaoh's going to go out and just begin things for the day with a prayer to the Nile. Wait on the bank of the Nile to meet him, and take in your hand the staff that was changed into a snake. So make sure it's the same stick. I've got the stick with all of your sticks inside of it. Then say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to say to you, let my people go, so that they may worship me in the desert. But until now you have not listened. So that, again, the goal of getting out right now from the Lord's perspective is just let them go out to worship me. We'll talk about what happens next later, but right now I just want you to let them go out to worship me and to serve me. This is what the Lord says. By this you will know that I am the Lord. With the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water of the Nile, and it will be changed into blood. The word strike there, do you remember the old word smite? Yeah. It will be changed into blood. The fish in the Nile will die, and the river will stink. The Egyptians will not be able to drink its water. Sometimes fish die in pretty good water. How many fish of mine did I lose last year, Art? Not uncountable. I think it was 10, though. I have gold. I have fish in my office. I have a fish tank and fish. Anyway, they haven't all survived. I've got two in there now that are doing pretty good, but I feed them too much. But to buy a bigger tank. But that's with just ordinary. Well, I think that's New Ulm water. New Ulm water is tough on fish. Even if I filter it, it's pretty tough. Maybe I should buy my water. I don't know where that comes from, though. On Broadway?
Yeah.
Okay. Where the bus drivers get their water? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Belkies, be careful. A couple years ago, two of our bus drivers were killed at that intersection getting water in the wintertime. Was that 6, 8 years ago? I think of that all the time. But two of our school bus drivers were killed there, crossing that street in the dark, you know, to get water. But yeah. But you're right, that's probably where I should get my water. But it is, it's like a 25-gallon tank, though. That would be a lot of containers, but still. The Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the streams and canals, over the ponds and all the reservoirs, and they will turn to blood. Blood will be everywhere in Egypt, even in the wooden buckets and the stone jars. Where else did Moses stretch out his hand over the water?
The Red Sea.
The Red Sea. So we have a hint of something else coming here. God has power over all of the waters, doesn't he? I mean, he made them in the first place. When did God create water? What day of creation? Actually, it was day one. It was, but that was the separation. The waters were there on day one. V'ruach Elohim rechefet al panei hamayim. The Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the deep. Day one. That's why when I draw day one for the kids, light, dark, there are little waves on the bottom to remind the kids that there's, on day one, the water. The earth was, how did Professor Deutschlander used to say it? He'd get out his funny voices. And he would say it was the primordial mass of this shapeless water blob that would become formed more readily as the world was there. But it was this. It was formless, it was empty, but it was there, and it was wet. That was our world in the beginning. I usually show the kids a picture of what planet in our solar system is just blue. Do you know which one?
Neptune.
I like to show the kids a photograph of Neptune. Just a blob with no land masses or anything on it. So they kind of see what it might have looked like. I don't know. But I could just show them a water droplet too, but I'd do that. So God has control over everything. But that's curious though. Did Moses or Aaron, did they move around? Over the streams and canals and ponds, and were there some of those in the area, or did they say the words out loud? You know, over the Nile, there's a canal over there. Over the canals, I know there's a reservoir over there. There's a pond over there, and things like that. I'm not exactly sure, but in some way he did this. But all of the water that was out, even in the buckets and the jars, all of it was turned to blood. So just all of a sudden, blood. Yes?
There's an interesting note in the Concordia study that says that the Egyptians' gods inhabited idols and images made of wood, clay, and stone, and that clay may have been intended as a rebuke.
Yeah, Professor Rohrs, who wrote that note, is a Concordia St. Louis professor back in the 40s, and he, Walter Rohrs was his name. And he got that phrase from, when did Adersheim live? 1700s, 1800s? No, 1800s, I think. Adersheim wrote a bunch of really cool books about the Old Testament. And in his History of the People of Israel, I think he came up with that phrasing. But that's exactly right. Adersheim is the one who even tried to associate each plague with a different god of Egypt. Which is not an easy thing. I mean, there are a lot of gods of Egypt, but you wonder if you've got the right one when you do it, because how many different gods of Egypt are over the waters and over the storms and over the frogs and over the dogs and everything else. And but it is true. The plagues do seem to strike all of the beliefs of the Egyptians. You've been listening to Invisible Church, the Bible study podcast from St. Paul's Lutheran Church, New Ulm, Minnesota.